Justice before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. I am Monica Donnier, and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please.
Good morning.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Despite the complexity of the briefing, and this is actually a simple case, Farmers provided Quest with service that, as a matter of physics, constituted switched access service, and that was provided pursuant to a lawful tariff that was consistent with the Communications Act and the FCC's rules. Farmers switched calls from Quest customers and, as the Commission found, terminated those calls to the conference calling companies at their conference bridges. Under these circumstances, under the filed rate doctrine, Farmers is entitled to collect its charges for switched access service that it provided Quest. Moreover, Quest should not be afforded a windfall by being allowed to avoid paying for the services that it actually received. Now, to assist the court in considering the case, I want to describe the context in which this case arises. In their briefs, the FCC and the large carriers suggest that these kinds of revenue sharing agreements between local carriers like Farmers and the conference calling companies are a scam, that there's something improper about them. They are not. These arrangements have long been permissible under the Commission's rules, which until recently allowed small rural carriers like Farmers to establish their tariffs based on their historical costs rather than on anticipated future costs. And the reason the Commission did that is to provide the rural carriers with a mechanism by which they could try to raise funds in order to build out their systems and convert them to the new broadband environment. Mm-hmm. That's what Farmers did here. It used its revenue to convert its system to broadband.
Well, you know what our standard of review is. And the Commission has examined the contracts and determined that they are so far from being tariff-like documents that they cannot be considered part of a tariff service.
Your Honor, the Commission has confused two silos, if you will, that are involved here. Silo one involves the switched access service, where the parties to the contracts are Farmers and, or not the contracts, it operates by tariff, by operation of law, Farmers and Quest. Then the Commission has, there is no doubt that the Quest received switched access service in a physical sense. The calls were delivered to Farmers, they were switched to Farmers customers through its local loop, and the Quest customers were connected to the conference calling bridges as they intended. That should be the end of the inquiry, in our view, because there's no doubt that they received switched access.
I understand that's your view, yeah. And that's why I started off by pointing out our standard of review. Now, you know, it's very deferential to the Commission. It's interpreting a tariff. It's interpreting contracts that you argue come within the tariff. And you say this is simply a matter of physics. Well, you know, that's the first time I heard that word in this case. But in any event, that's not the way the Commission looked at it. And we would have to find that the Commission either, you know, acted beyond its authority or was arbitrary and capricious. I mean,
yes, Your Honor.
It's a very high standard.
And, well, we submit that the Commission erred as a matter of law, that there's no deference paid in these situations because the Commission violated several provisions at once when it tried to reach out to the second silo, which is to look to the second set of agreements between Farmers and the conference calling companies. We have three arguments there. The first is that
Before you go into all three, you said the case was simple. I saw it that way, too. Tell me why this is wrong. The commission concluded that the conference calling companies were not end users under the tariff, and that's why they reached the conclusion that they read the tariff that way, and that is why the commission, that's the basis on which the commission based its decision. They weren't end users under the tariff, period.
Yes, and Our answer to that question is multi-part, Your Honor, but it begins this way.
You mean my simple question has a complicated answer?
No, it has a multi-part answer, but it's simple, and it all involves the application of the filed rate doctrine. The answer here is that in providing access service, Farmers was required to issue a tariff.
It says the commission said these were not tariffed. These didn't fall within the tariff.
Well, that's inconsistent with their prior decisions, Your Honor. The service that was provided was local access service, or access service, as it's called in the case. The calls came in from Quest customers. They were switched to the local loop by Farmers. Farmers then delivered them to the conference calling company's bridges, where those calls were terminated.
Right.
And so as a matter of physics, we had access service that was provided. And
But I'm talking about the commission's interpretation of the tariff. They were not, I got the physics part of it. But there's a legal question. In addition to the question of physics.
The legal question is
that the commission's decision is based on its conclusion that the tariff required them to be end users, and they weren't, period.
Well, our position, Your Honor, is that the application of the tariff, and therefore the application of the filed rate doctrine, turns on the physics, because the service that was provided here physically was access service. Now, the commission has tried to go to the contracts and say, well, despite the physics, the contracts mean that this service was not access service. Mm-hmm. And the commission points to two things, really. First is the terms of the resulting contracts contained provisions that were not you would expect to have in a tariff relationship. And the second point they make is, well, in carrying out its billing practices under the arrangement, Farmers did not follow the requirements of the tariff to bill and collect the rate. We believe that those are irrelevant as a matter of law. The application of the decision should turn on the physical nature of the service received. If this is access service, then it is access service under a valid tariff, and Farmers is entitled to collect the fee
for
that.
I'll just try once more. Under the tariff, switched access service requires an end user. That's what the commission said.
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay. And they said the conference companies were not end users.
Well, there are several problems with their argument, Your Honor. Uh-huh. First, Section 6.5B of the Commission's rules requires Farmers to bill in situations where it's provided access service to an internet exchange or to an IXC like Quest, and that happened here. Also, we argue that the tariff does not include an end user requirement. If you look at what the commission did, they interpreted section 6.1 of the tariff to say that there has to be an end user, and they based that on the straight top line of 6.1. But what they ignore is that 6.1 incorporates within it other provisions of the tariffs in section 6.1.3. It incorporates
These tariffs are normally pretty hard to understand, but this one comes with a picture, right? And it shows all three kinds of service ending. This is this picture. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, the one that has.
Okay, it ends, and it says, and it ends at a picture of a telephone, which says end user.
Yes. And it depends upon the definition of end user, Your Honor. And if you look at section 6.1.3, you will see that which are incorporated in 6.1, you will see that they talk about delivering these services, but these provisions do not include an end user requirement. In the sense of a person who's picking up the telephone, those provisions are satisfied by delivery of the call to physical devices, computers, time and weather services, answering machines, which is probably the closest equivalent to a conferencing bridge. So there is an end user here, but not in the sense of a human who's picking up the phone. It's delivered to a piece of equipment. And that's explicitly permitted by the absence of the end user requirement in sections 6.13, which are incorporated into section 6.1. That's why, to come back to Judge Rogers' question, we think that there is not deference to the commission's interpretation here because it was flat wrong. You simply cannot ignore a part of a tariff. as they did here, because it's not convenient for them to recognize that this was incorporated. And as we show in the briefs, it was incorporated by virtue of a commission order in 1984, which specifically directed NECA to bring these provisions back to clarify things. And that's when the tariff provision, before it went into effect for all these rural telephone companies, was amended to bring in these provisions that expressly do not include an end user requirement. So we think that's why their core interpretation is wrong. But to come back to the fact, Your Honor, the our position is that the application of the filed rate doctrine here is absolute, and that the filed rate doctrine does not permit the parties to contract around a valid tariff. And that's why the physical nature of the service is so important. Because if this is, in fact, access service, then the parties can't contract around it, and the principal rationale evaporates.
The commission's response to that is, well, the tariff may have been narrower than the statute and regulations, and you're bound by that tariff.
And our answer to that question, Your Honor, it's something like the answer in a preemption case, which is the law says one thing, the regulations say another thing, and the commission's answer is, well, if you chose to draft more narrowly than that, you're bound by what you drafted with. But that's obviously wrong, because the provisions of the tariff cannot change the governing law and cannot govern the statute. It cannot provide a mechanism for getting around the filed rate doctrine. Otherwise, there would be no meaning to the filed rate doctrine if the parties can simply contract around it, or the carrier could offer a much narrower service and then say a much more favorable one to the receiver and say, I'm sorry, we drafted less narrowly than, or we drafted a very narrow tariff that didn't go as far as we could have under the statute and the rules.
Now, the commission, as I understand it, took a slightly different view of the billing aspect of this case in terms of, were these conference calling companies subscribers? And in Farmers 1, that was significant. In Farmers 2, again, it was significant to the commission as indicating that these were not within the tariff. And you're saying that's all irrelevant because of the physics here.
We're saying that the physics governs. That's correct, Your Honor. But we also say that the commission's interpretation is inconsistent with its prior precedents that it didn't recognize, which got this right. And these are the two Jefferson cases. And I will work my way back to the billing question. I want to address that.
What's your response to the commission's comment about its precedent, the two Jefferson cases?
Well, they simply say that those cases are irrelevant, but they're at the heart of
this
case.
Well, they say the issue wasn't raised in those cases in Jefferson 1, and then in Jefferson 2, it was confined to the very specific facts of that case.
Well, the holding in Jefferson 1 is that when a conference calling company received access service under a provision that provided for a net flow of funds, that was a tariff service. And in fact, the holding was that Jefferson had violated the filed rate doctrine by not going ahead and billing and collecting that information correctly. Mm-hmm. So that is the answer to Your Honor's question about the billing aspects. The answer is it's irrelevant. The remedy for this, there was a violation. Farmers did not bill and collect as it should have. When counsel stepped into the case, counsel spotted that error and immediately corrected it. And it's like no good deed is going unpunished. That's now part of the bill of particulars. But Jefferson 1 tells us that that is a filed rate, is covered by the filed rate doctrine, and the carrier is obliged to pay, and that the local access provider is required to bill it. Jefferson 2 it also is extremely relevant to the case, and I think it answers some of Judge Tatel's questions, because in Jefferson 2, what the court looked at the arrangement with the net flow of funds and said, and applying the standard NERUC test, said this is a tariff that the company was obliged to issue by law. That is, it was lawfully required to do that. And the service that it provided was tariff service. It was identical to everybody here, recipients.
Was there a question in the case as to whether the company was an end user?
They did not raise the end user doctrine Your Honor.
That's why the commission says the case is not relevant to the issue here. The issue here is this case turns on the fact that the commission found conference companies not to be end users.
Well,
that issue, as you just admitted, was not addressed in Jefferson 2.
The situations are exactly the same, Your Honor. In all cases, the CCCs had subscribed to the service. They were receiving the access service. And what the commission said in Jefferson 2 is, This is perfectly permissible and lawful, and the IXC is required to pay because all IXCs are paid the same amount, and all customers of the local carrier receive exactly the same service. Like here, the calls come in, they're transferred to the local loops, they use the same processes and the same network to get to the end. What you are providing here is access service, and according to the Commission in Jefferson, and everybody is receiving it under the same terms and conditions. So that's the service, why the filed rate doctrine applies.
That's one of the points the Commission made. They're not. These are individual contracts, different terms, et cetera. So.
There were individual contracts in both Jefferson 1 and Jefferson 2, Your Honor.
There was an exclusivity provision.
There was an exclusivity provision as set forth in the decision in Jefferson 1. We have four pages in our brief that spell out that these contracts are virtually identical, or at least they have many of the common terms. But what is set out in Jefferson 2, why that's the controlling decision, is that under these circumstances where the entity has subscribed and received the service and where the local carrier makes this available under the same terms and conditions, that's determinative, and that's why the filed rate doctrine applies. The fact that there is a separate agreement on the side that deals with the marketing arrangements does not change that analysis. And that's where the commission goes wrong here. It looks at the contracts and says, we're shocked to find that there are these sidebar agreements, and that changes everything. Well, the result was contrary in Jefferson 2, and the logic of the commission's own rule that it issued in November comes out the other way. It expressly says there our law has been and is today that in a situation where there is a contract providing for a net flow of funds, that does not mean that this is not a switched access service for which the IXC has to pay.
All right. Do you want to save some time for rebuttal?
I've saved some time for 4 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor. I would just like to come back to finish with the point you raised, Judge Rogers. Our position is that in a situation like this, the filed rate doctrine does apply. We admit that Farmers was required to bill and collect separately for the payments. They relied on the net flow of funds here, and so they netted it out. That was not correct. But the remedy for that kind of violation of the administrative provisions of the tariff are not that the carrier gets off scot-free. It's that the commission should begin, if it deems it appropriate, an independent proceeding, as it did in Jefferson 1, to address the problem under its existing rules.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Buttrock?
May it please the Court, Ross Bunchrock on behalf of Intervenor Northern Valley Communications. Your Honors, this case goes beyond a discrete analysis of Farmers' tariff provisions. In the last 4 years, the FCC has reached four different conclusions on the question of whether lax MSS access charges on calls terminated by two conference calling companies by IXCs like Quest, AT&T, and the other interveners. In Farmers 1, on October 2nd, 2007, the FCC held, the question of whether the conference calling companies paid Farmers more than Farmers paid them is thus irrelevant to their status as end users. The FCC specifically rejected Quest's argument that conference calling companies can be end users under Farmers' tariff only if they make payments to Farmers. But, Your Honor, 784 days later, on November 24, 2009, years after ignoring the 90-day deadline established in 405B1, the FCC flip-flopped and held that conference calling companies could not be end users under Farmers tariff unless they made payments to Farmers because
What's wrong with that?
Well, Your Honor, under Section 405B1, the Farmers 1 decision was final. There had to be a final appealable order under 405B1 and B2, and therefore the commission no longer had jurisdiction or the ability to reverse that conclusion in this adjudication without a reasoned analysis, as this court has held in WLS and Greater Boston. But fast forward to the Northern Valley, a separate case involving my client, Northern Valley. When the FCC decided the Northern Valley cases, the commission, which the commission says support its case here, the commission concluded that a payment from an end user to a LEC is required, but not because of the language of the tariff, but because it sought to interpret its rules to require such a payment. So what the FCC is effectively doing is trying to augment the statutory definition set forth in 47-153-20, which defines access services. And so fast forward again to the fourth version of this in the last 4 years. On November 18th, 2011, in its intercarrier compensation order, 724 days after releasing Farmers 2, the FCC comes full circle and abandons its Farmers 2 flip-flop without even acknowledging it, that it had existed, and holds that tariff access charges can be assessed by LECs on calls terminated to conference client companies by long-distance carriers, even if there's a net payment from the LEC to the conference client company. So we've got four different answers to the same question in 4 years, and the FCC has never provided a reasoned analysis for this announced change that we only became aware of in the context of the Farmers adjudication. Therefore, the Farmers 2 decision is arbitrary and capricious. It should be vacated until such time as the Commission provides a reasoned analysis for its flip-flop. And again, going back to the issues that were raised by the FCC in justifying its decision and suggesting that it has jurisdiction to make this change, they look to Gottlieb versus Pena, but that essentially reads out of existence 405B2. So they don't have the ability, you know, when Congress has provided a deadline and a remedy, the Commission can't just go back and claw back jurisdiction and change its mind. And in fact, carriers like Northern Valley have been relying upon the Farmers 1 decision for years without even understanding that there was any possibility that the FCC might possibly change its mind about whether it's going to honor that precedent or not. And with
reliance, but it did say there about subscribing and billing, so I mean, you're on notice in that sense.
Well, that you're right, Your Honor, they did say that, but even in the order on reconsideration, they started setting up this flip-flop, and so instead of focusing on payment, they started talking about end user and subscription, but they've focused on payment in Farmers 1, and that's
what I understood the Commission to be saying is, look, there are three provisions in this tariff that we looked at. When you read them together, you can provide services under the tariff, but you have to do it in a certain way. And if you don't do it in a certain way, it's not a tariff service. And here, end users were required, and there were no end users.
Well, first, they said the tariff matters, right? In Farmers 1, they said, the tariff says what it says. Farmers wasn't taking service. There can be such a thing as free subscribership, right? So they weren't looking to subscriber. They weren't looking to the definition of end user. They're looking at payment. But then in Farmers 2, they said, forget what we said a few months ago, or actually 2 years ago. The focus is now on the flow of payments.
No,
Did you pay?
They didn't say forget. In Farmers
well, they didn't 1, acknowledge
in
it.
Farmers 1, the first Farmers case relied, the Commission relied on Farmers' assurance that these companies were paying customers, and
Your Honor,
they subsequently discovered they weren't.
That, with all respect, that's incorrect. The FCC knew definitively that there was no money changing hands, that the conference client companies were not paying Farmers, that in fact Farmers was paying a net payment to the conference client companies. And so essentially, if you focus on paragraph 38 of the first Farmers order, they said
the whole point was that they were part of the regular billing system. They were subscribers. I mean, that was Farmers 1. That was the whole assumption.
Well, that was the assumption, but that wasn't what the conclusion turned upon. If you look at paragraph 38 of the FCC's decision, they specifically suggest and emphatically say that subscribership doesn't matter, payments don't matter. Mm-hmm. It's that you can have such, there is such a thing called a free subscription. There's something called a free magazine subscription. If you look at page 38, the FCC specifically rejects Quest's characterization that, well, Farmers didn't treat them like a real customer, they didn't put them in the billing system, they didn't send them a bill. That was all after the fact reanalysis in Farmers 2. That wasn't the focus of Farmers 1. Farmers 1 turned on.
Why would there be free customer service? I'm just curious. I didn't know that.
Well, Quest does it all the time.
I've been trying to get it for years.
Well, I bet if you.
In fact, the price keeps going up.
Quest will offer you a free FIO subscription for 3 months. And if you don't like it, you don't have to pay for it. In the meantime, they're probably charging access charges on the calls that are terminating to your Verizon line at your house. Does that mean that, therefore, they have to refund those monies if you don't subscribe to Verizon's FIO service? And that's what they're suggesting here.
I agree with your point that the Commission said, in paragraph 38, that the net payment doesn't matter. But it also said that the record shows that the conference calling companies did subscribe, i.e., enter their names for Farmers tariffed services. and they cite the answer that was filed in the case. Thus, the conference calling companies are both customers and end users. That's the commission's finding in paragraph 38.
But, Your Honor, the sine qua non of subscription under the new analysis in Farmers 2 was the changing of money, the exchange of money. And so the FCC basically said in Farmers 2 that the ministerial act of not sending an invoice and not receiving a payment for that invoice changes the question of whether or not this is access service. And that's ridiculous, number one. But number two, the FCC didn't have jurisdiction 2.5 years later to change its mind in the context of this adjudication.
Well, they have a different interpretation of that section, but
well, they say that 405B1, that where Congress says, you know, you've got to deal with reconsiderations within 90 days, doesn't provide a remedy, but
so
they're wrong.
So whether or not you're going to grant reconsideration?
Well, they ignore B2. 405B2 says that it's got to be a final appealable order, because if you look at the congressional or the legislative history in 1988, they were concerned about just this fact. If the FCC could just say, oh, you know, we got the order out, and they could effectively eliminate completely any judicial review. And so that's why this result is so egregious here, and that's why this is a decision that must be vacated as arbitrary and capricious.
Thank you. Why don't we hear from the commission?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Joel Marcus for the FCC.
It's a matter of physics.
This is a tariff case, Judge Rogers, and the rules of physics don't govern here. The language of the tariff governs here.
I understood that to be a way of saying Quest received the service.
Quest received some kind of service, yes. But because this is a tariff case, and we are existing here under a tariff regime that's set forth in Section 203 of the Communications Act. And because the nature of the tariff is the very thing that defines the relationship between the provider and the customer, and that's why 203 says that you may not even provide a service that's not specified in your tariff. So well, there was
this service provided. This service was specified. And why were the conference calling companies not end users?
Well, the service was specified as a switched access as a service that is a service to an end user. Mm-hmm. And an end user ultimately comes down to a subscriber. And the a subscriber has to be a subscriber under the terms of the end user access tariff. And the conference companies were not subscribers under the end user access tariff because the end user access tariff requires there to be regular billing, late penalties, payment for service, no special deals, service on terms open to everybody, common carriage, the whole gamut of the things that are the essence of a tariff service. And there is absolutely nothing about
that's different from Farmers One, right? What you just said.
I don't believe so, Judge Kavanaugh. The reason why is that in Farmers One, none of the evidence of the non-tariff nature of the relationship between the conference companies and farmers was before the commission. In Farmers One, the only thing that the commission was looking at was the net flow of funds. And in paragraphs 37 and 38 of the first order, the commission was assessing Quest's argument that because there was a net flow of funds, the conference companies were not end users. And the commission says, no, we reject the net flow of funds argument because there doesn't have to be a net flow of funds. But the commission, as you pointed out, Judge Rogers, in, for example, in footnote 139 in paragraph 38, this is at page 545 of the joint appendix, it says the record shows that they did subscribe. See their answer at 7. And the answer at 7 is the critical thing in this whole thing. The answer at 7 basically says we billed them, they paid, they were customers. And that was the representation, the critical representation that turned out to be entirely phony. And if you look at paragraph 138, I'm sorry, footnote 138 of that same order, this is on page 544 of the joint appendix, The commission says, we note that Quest has failed to prove that the conference calling companies do not pay farmers for service because the marketing fees cancel out the tariff payments. There, the commission is specifically saying, yes, there may be a flow of cash from one side to the other, but there's still a netting here. But in fact, there was no netting. The commission specifically found that there was no netting in the third reconsideration order, and this is at it's in a different volume of the appendix. It's at page 5 of the appendix. This is footnote 35 in paragraph 11 of the third order, and the commission says, it became clear that the conference calling companies never paid subscriber line charges or made any other payments to farmers, and that farmers never expected to be paid. In fact, to this day, farmers has sent some bills after the fact, but it has never taken any action to enforce those bills. It's never actually sought payment, and it specifically advised the conference calling companies that they didn't have to pay. And so if you look at this, and then if you go to...
So just so I'm clear.
Another part. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just so I'm clear. If the record had showed that the conference calling companies were billed monthly, and let's assume also that they paid, but there was still a net payment, would there be any problem?
No, there wouldn't. We would be in Farmers 1 in the first order in this case. There would be a problem in that they violated the act, but there, you know, by earning an excess amount of money, but there was no remedy for that. It was the subsequently developed evidence showing that the relationship was entirely, fundamentally different in reality than it was in the commission's initial understanding that led the commission to conclude that under the tariff, and under the tariff's definition of switched access, which is the governing provision here, it's the law, that the tariff required there to be an end user, and that for the host of reasons showing that there was no genuine tariff relationship between the conference companies and farmers, those conference companies were not end users under any conceivable understanding of that term.
If you're a free subscriber, can you be an end user?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. That's what the commission answered in the Northern Valley case, saying that if the tariff calls for zero charge, that's not allowed. But that doesn't have to do with the set of laws that we have here. That has to do with the nature of what a telecommunications service is. But I think that you wouldn't really find farmers disputing that. They sent the court a 28J letter on November 16th, and they said in their own letter, a document which provides that the carrier will receive no compensation for providing a telecommunication service is not a tariff. And so the idea, the commission in that paragraph 38 did, it was a kind of dueling dictionary situation between Quest and Farmers, and the commission did say that the idea of subscribe as a generic matter is capable of encompassing the idea of a free subscription. By the way, even if you sign up, Judge Tatel, for the three months of Fios, the idea is that you will become a paying customer. I don't think that they're in it just for the charitable
function.
That's
too bad. Let me ask you this. Now, Farmers has been providing a service to Quest.
They have been providing
and Quest
some
hasn't
kind of,
paid for any of that.
Well, right? they've been providing some kind of service for Quest. It is
right.
Not switched access service.
Well, but it's a service. Whatever it is, it's a service. Is there a way in which farmers, notwithstanding what's happened, can at least be compensated for, or to put it the other way, where, I mean, has Quest gotten a free service here for all this time?
Well, we don't know yet. Farmers is currently litigating against Quest in district courts. There's currently the damages phase of this proceeding is pending before the commission, where the commission may have the opportunity to assess that. I would point
wait,
out
wait,
that...
Finish your sentence. Assess what?
Oh, assess whether... there should be some sort of offsetting.
Oh, so that could be done. That could be done in those proceedings.
It,
in other
it
words,
could
Quest could be required to pay.
It could possibly
for whatever it was it bought from.
It
In other words, is it a bar? That's what.
Right. At this point, it's not an absolute bar, although I would point out that Section 203 of the Act says that you may not assess charges for anything that's not specified in your tariff. You know, again, this is a tariff case, and it's governed ultimately by Section 203, and I think it's ironic here that that Farmers is standing before you saying you must strictly enforce the filed rate doctrine, the filed rate doctrine this, the filed rate doctrine that. The filed rate doctrine is a tariff doctrine. And if you want to take advantage of doctrines that are rather draconian tariff doctrines, you have to comply with the terms of your tariff. It just doesn't work that if you want to exploit loopholes in commission laws and regulations, that you can do it without actually conforming to all of the legal requirements for doing that.
So as a matter of physics, let me just understand one thing. The conference call company is the end user of, now this is my question. In other words, I want to have a conference call with my colleagues, all right? So I dial into conference call company one, and then they dial my colleagues, and then we all talk. But
actually, everybody dials in at the same time.
Well, the way it works on our court, they don't do that.
Yeah. These were more along the lines of chat lines, Judge Rogers, like adult-oriented kind of chat lines than like, the sort of thing that you might do in the court. I hope. We don't have to
don't
go there.
So
right?
Sure.
No, we call it having a conference call when everyone's on the right? Okay, so my point is everyone calls in simultaneously to the conference calling company.
Right.
So everyone who calls in is deemed the end user, not...
Well, the people who are calling in are end users of their own local telephone company, but they're not the end user of, let's say, Farmers, if that's who's providing the conference call service. When you call into Iowa to have your chat, let's say, your call is connected to a piece of equipment. It's basically a computer that has the capability of handling multiple telephone calls simultaneously so that everybody can speak with one another. And so there is something on the end of the line. The term end user, though, here is a specific term that's defined in a tariff. It's a specifically defined legal term, as Judge Tatel was pointing out earlier, with legal definitions, with legal meanings and legal consequences. And in order to be an end user under this tariff, and therefore in order for a long-distance company to be on the hook for the access charges that it would have to pay for a call placed to an end user, there must in fact be an end user as defined under the tariff.
But look at Section 2.6 defining end user.
Section 2.6 of the tariff.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It says end user means any customer, not a carrier.
Right, any customer, customer.
Right.
But then you have to go look at customer, the definition of customer, Judge Rogers.
Customer takes you to subscription?
Yes, it does, Judge Rogers. Customer is defined at JA 201. This is also in Section 2 of the tariff. It says the term customer,
right,
customers, denotes any individual, blah, 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 which subscribes to the services offered under this tariff.
Okay, so...
And that's where that's the critical thing here.
Farmers 1, where the commission referred to enter their names for Farmers tariff services.
Yes.
Entering your name isn't enough. Or that's a term of art that has all of these other aspects to it?
I don't know if it's a term of art in the sense that I can cite you cases where the commission has defined that specifically, but I think that it's a term of art in the sense that, and this is proven by that footnote 139, that when the commission was talking about entering names, when the commission was talking about subscribing, it was talking about its reliance on the representation that there was a legitimate relationship under the tariff here, that there was a taking of service under the tariff, that there was an expectation of service under the tariff. That came with the expectation of payment, the expectation of billing, the expectation of conforming the party's conduct to the sort of conduct that one engages in when one is operating under a tariff. And none of that is present here.
But they had a commercial relationship.
They did indeed.
And they used the service.
They used some kind of service.
Right.
But again, under a tariff regime, under Section 203 of the Communications Act, Judge Kavanaugh, it contemplates the very idea of providing service that is not a tariff service. It makes it illegal. It says you may not provide a service that's not a tariff service, mm-hmm. and it sets up this tariff regime. You must describe exactly what your services are, or else you're going to be doing something illegal.
Right.
And so they provided
a
service.
What I'm trying to ferret out is what is the line between a permissible and impermissible?
I think that the commission didn't need to address this because here we're so far over the line that we didn't need to determine.
We're so far over the line, we have to have some idea of what the line might be.
Well, speaking hypothetically, and the commission didn't address this, if there had been, you know, a discount on the price, for example, we'll charge you only $10 a month rather than $50 a month, maybe that would have been something that would have shown that they were actually providing service under the tariff, but they had gotten a special deal, for example. But here,
there has to be payment from conference call company to farmers.
The tariff requires payment. The commission has long held that payment is required under a tariff. The Communications Act defines a telecommunications service. No, again, the commission.
Just a payment.
That's right. There has to be essentially, if you put in the netting, you can say, Judge Kavanaugh, there has to be a responsibility for payment. So if you and
I, it seems like a kind of a shell game. If they're saying, there has to be a payment. But of course, you can pay them back.
I don't know. If you and I make two bets on, you know, the football games on Sunday, and one is bigger than the other, and I win one of them and you win one of them, you owe me some money and I owe you some money, there will be a net flow of cash from one of us to the other one of us. But that didn't mean that you didn't have a payment responsibility to me. It was just overwhelmed, essentially, by my payment responsibility to you.
Suppose in this case that the conference companies paid under the tariff, I don't know, $5 to $25 a month, okay? And the understanding was that farmers would reimburse them out of the access charge from that $5, reimburse them out of the access charge that they get from Quest. Still zero.
If there was netting, in other words, if the deal had been you owe us X dollars, and by the way, you know, this all this whole discussion assumes that all the other terms of the tariff are being complied with.
It has to be illegitimate.
Right, exactly. Right? And so there are many indicia of illegitimacy here in terms of tariff, you know, in terms of whether this was even service under a tariff.
But the commission's point is you don't have to figure out what that line is, because here there was no payment at all.
I think there was no payment at all. There was also no other behavior that indicated that the parties regarded themselves as being governed by a tariff.
But when you say legitimacy, why is it more legitimate to say, oh, give me $5 and I'll give you back $25?
Oh, that's not in terms of the net payment.
Why is that more legitimate than just the payment of $20?
That is
in one direction, the net payment.
I think that the nature of the responsibility is an important one.
Why?
Because a free service is not a tariff.
You give me the money and I'll give you the money back makes it okay, but you just give me the money even though it's the same result, right? Same amounts?
That's something that the commission...
So two situations with the exact same amounts, one's legitimate and one's illegitimate just because of how you booked it?
Well, you know, in our football example, mm-hmm. Judge Kavanaugh, if I refuse to pay...
Right.
And you sued me.
Okay, I'm still you could
sue me and you could say, he has to pay me. We made a bet. He lost. He has to pay me.
Okay,
in the damages phase, there might be some, you know, rejiggering of exactly who owes what to whom, but there's still an actual obligation, and that's important for the tariff regime.
I thought your answer to my question was that if there was a, if the subscriber charge was $25, and the deal was you pay us that, we'll reimburse you $25 out of what we charge Qwest, that that would not be a legitimate subscriber arrangement. Isn't that what you said to me?
Well, if it were a direct, we will just simply reimburse you. That I don't think. But here it's the nature of the quid pro quo is you'll pay us, the way it should be is you'll pay us $25 for service. In exchange, you will have an obligation under our deal to deliver to me X number of minutes of traffic every month. So there's a, it's not just a free provision of service. The local carrier is also receiving some service from somebody else. And so it's that service that's provided by the conference company that becomes the other side of my bet with Judge Kavanaugh. There are potentially enforceable obligations on both sides. And I think that the existence of an actual obligation is important here. But I think
I'm not sure what the substance of that is getting at, though. What's the point? If the two amounts of the two different scenarios are exactly the same, then what is the big picture point that the commission is trying to get at, other than potentially it doesn't like these deals at all?
Again, it's interesting to figure out where the exact line might be and why the line might be there. But here, I just want to remind you and the other members of the court that we're talking about a relationship that bears no resemblance to a tariff relationship at all, special terms and deals, you know, et cetera, all of the factors that I've talked about that we've set forth in our brief. But I think ultimately, at the end of the day, it matters because when you're talking about Section 203 of the Act, and you're talking about a tariff regime, the legal bells and whistles matter, because that's the way the regime works. And even though the Commission, as a matter of policy, has allowed a little bit of slippage in the joints because of these net payment arrangements, which it deems permissible, I don't think that undermines the idea that there is something important about compliance with the actual obligations that are imposed under the Communications Act. Did you have a question, Mr. Rogers?
Remind me here, in this case, I thought it was farmers wanted to increase the number of minutes. So it made this contract saying you have an obligation to provide us with a minimum of X number of minutes per month.
That's correct.
And because that's so valuable to us.
That's because it's valuable because they thought they would be able to charge the long-distance companies.
No, but just let me play it out here.
Sure.
It's so valuable to us that we're not going to charge you anything, all right? But you have this obligation to provide this minimum number of minutes per month. If you don't provide it, then we'll start charging you or something like that. And I understand your point about special deals and terms and all that, but to the extent we're focusing on the money end of it, that's really not the Commission's concern. And I want to be clear, because the Commission in its notice of proposed rulemaking is saying, well, our rules allow this. Our rules have allowed this. And
the rules have allowed it. I had sent a 28-J letter to the court about a week ago where the Commission actually adopted new rules. And the Commission did not outlaw this practice entirely, but it did change its tariff regime so that if you wind up with large increases in your traffic, you have to file new tariffs.
Right, but that's in the future. Right.
Yes, that's in the future. It's not this case.
That's right.
But I think does your question reduce down to the same question that Judge Kavanaugh was asking Judge Rogers, which is, you know, why go through this if there's just going to be a net flow of money
the other way? All the questions are, why go through the steps and... it just seems unfair if Qwest gets a free ride and it got, as a matter of physics,
It's very difficult to say that Qwest got a free ride here when it basically gets no marginal revenue from a long-distance phone call these days, and all that was happening was that Farmers was sitting there running the meter as fast as it could and imposing millions of dollars on liability on Quest. And I think what the commission points out, both
all,
in the
all of which would have been permissible if they'd just done the legal niceties.
All of which would have been permissible.
So
but
the running the meter thing, I know that's rhetorically strong, but that doesn't really do much for you.
I think what it does for me, Judge Kavanaugh, is that if you're going to exploit loopholes in the commission's rules, you better do it right. And we don't have to be the handmaidens to this. And keep in mind that, you know, every time Quest has to spend another $1 million on access charges, it at some point or another comes out of my pocket and yours. So it's not that these things are entirely cost-free to society. The, if you will, the net flow of funds just gets hidden someplace else. Mm-hmm. So if the court has any more questions, I'd be happy to answer them. But otherwise, we would urge that the court affirm the commission's order.
It's just like tax law, right? There's lots of loopholes, and if you're going to exploit them, you better do them honestly.
I think you got to follow
the tax laws. You got to follow the tariffs.
I think that's what this is, right? I think that's exactly right, Judge Tatel. And you know, these doctrines, like the filed rate doctrine, can have some harsh consequences, but you only become the beneficiary of the harsh consequences if you have crossed your I's and dotted your T's and actually conformed to the... Did I say that wrong? Yes. I heard the laughter. So but you know what
need,
I meant.
You need to, and, you need to. You also need to follow the tariff carefully.
And that I think, proves my point.
Right.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. We'll hear from Quest. And I will begin by saying no free ride here.
Well, let me start right there with the free ride point and the sort of big picture point that Judge Kavanaugh was talking about. We don't view this at all as a free ride. This is an arbitrage scheme that the Commission's been struggling with for several years to try to figure out a way to control it. And the Commission said in the rulemaking order that recently came out with it, cited estimates that this is costing inter-exchange carriers billions of dollars. Because the conference companies and LECs like Farmers are exploiting these loopholes in the rules. It's not a service we want. It's a service because the Commission has no blocking rules that we're prohibited from stopping the calls from going through to the conference companies. But it's a situation where if the conference company said tomorrow, we don't want you to deliver this traffic, that would be fine with us. So it's not a windfall in the sense that we're making money from it. It's not a service that we want.
Excuse me, I'm not sure. Why wouldn't Quest, if the system operated the way it's supposed to, wouldn't Quest be just fine with this? It would charge the incoming caller for the long distance call and pay Farmers an access charge, wouldn't it?
The way pricing works in the long distance industry, it's generally sort of an all you can eat plan, so there aren't per minute charges for long distance calls. And what happens here is, because the way it's set up, the conference companies choose a rural LEC. Rural LECs have very, very high access rates because they have such low usage. So the rates, for example, Farmers' switched access rate is about 10 times what the switched access rate is for Quest as a local exchange carrier. So they pick the rural local exchange carriers so that the charges are then extremely high on the inter-exchange carriers, and that's the way they fund their free conference service.
So are people who are using this conference service, these adult conference services, they're making far more calls, long-distance calls, on whatever plan they have than other subscribers?
Right, because it encourages them. There are no incentives for them to have a reasonable length of a call. The rest of us, when we do a conference call, you get a bill based on the amount of time.
I get it.
Going back to the big picture point, I think it was ironic that Farmers is talking about the rulemaking and the Connect America Fund, because, again, thinking about how the Commission has been approaching this problem of arbitrage, it's had arbitrage in other areas of access charges. This is another one it's dealing with. Ultimately, what it did in the rulemaking was it, over a period of time, it's eliminating access charges so that there aren't these opportunities for arbitrage. It's been trying to deal with arbitrage in a series of ways in this context, which I think are reasonable. First, it gets the Farmers case, and in the first go-around, it didn't realize that there were no payments for communication services, so it said, well, they did subscribe to service and did enter their names because there was payment involved. Then they get new facts after they get past the concealment of evidence and manufactured evidence, and they say, okay, we realized that there wasn't payment here. As a technical matter, that means they're not end users under the tariff. And so we don't like the arbitrage schemes, but we can't just say sort of out of the blue they're all illegal per se. So first in the farmer's case, they say, okay, you didn't comply with your tariff, so and we do view this as a scam. So you did your scam in a way, you structured your scam as business partners in a way that's not consistent with your tariff. So that's illegal. Then the Northern Valley case comes along, and Northern Valley responded to the Quest case and said, okay, we're going to change our tariff. So our tariff provides for free service. And the commission said, no, it doesn't. The scam doesn't work that way either, because our access rules require that there be paying end user customers. Then in the rulemaking, which is going on during this period, and the commission in its notice makes all sorts of noises about how bad traffic pumping is and how bad this these situations are, the commission comes along in its rules and says, okay, to the extent traffic pumping is continuing in situations that we haven't addressed, we're going to adopt rules that we hope will eliminate traffic pumping or seriously deter it. It didn't go so far as to say we're going to prohibit revenue sharing because it was concerned that that might get rid of certain legitimate arrangements between companies. But it was basically saying all it addressed was situations under its rules where people were acting consistent with its access charge rules. It never said in the rulemaking proceeding, okay, now we've reconsidered things and think that it's always switched access even if you don't tariff it correctly. I mean, it does matter, going to the point Mr. Marcus made, it does matter in a tariff system that you tariff things correctly. Tariffs lie at the core of traditional common carrier regulation, and it is the flip side of the filed rate doctrine. If there are going to be all these harsh consequences if you don't follow your tariff, you have to be clear about what's in your tariff, and if you don't include something in your tariff, it's perfectly appropriate for you to suffer. In that regard, the commission precedent in the Western Union case that's cited in the briefs makes clear that even in a situation where it was the functional equivalent, even in a situation where the parties assumed and intended it for it to be in the tariff, the fact of the matter is the commission held that that is unlawful if you try to charge someone under the tariff for something that could and maybe should have been in the tariff, but you didn't include in the tariff. Now, it's a separate question whether at some point farmers might get some money back. That's pending in the damages proceeding and also in district court litigation. But the issue here is not the question of whether farmers at some point should get some money, which we not surprisingly don't think they should. We think they should not get money. But the issue here is whether they acted outside their tariff. And if you act outside your tariff, whether that's illegal.
And outside the tariff for you means?
Outside the tariff means we were being charged for switched access service under the interstate tariff. The interstate tariff says in order to charge someone switched access service, the service has to go to or from an end user.
Right.
And the commission found they weren't end users, just in the same way
right.
that.
So it all goes back to just whether a subscriber, there has to be this exchange of documentation.
Well, I think
the payment amount could have been exactly the same, and you would be in the same financial position, but you wouldn't have a legal argument.
Well, right, and we argued in the first round that the net payments, it should be illegal because it was ultimately the same thing as no payment at all. The net payments flowed in the wrong direction. But I think it's perfectly appropriate for the commission to say we're going to approach this narrowly and look at the tariffs now and look at the broader question in the rulemaking, which is also consistent with how the Iowa Utilities Board did it for intrastate traffic pumping in case also involving farmers, where they found that the conference companies weren't end users under the local tariff or the intrastate access tariff, and therefore farmers couldn't and other carriers couldn't charge the interexchange carriers for intrastate access. And then the Iowa Utilities Board also went forward and adopted rules so that they could try to prevent it more broadly in the future.
And your answer to my earlier question to the commission about whether Quest gets a windfall here is you didn't make any money on these calls anyway, right?
Right. And in fact,
what this does, it avoids a loss. Is that right?
I don't know if it's in the record that it avoids a loss per se, but yeah. We're having to spend all this money, and other interexchange carriers are having to spend billions of dollars on calls that we don't want.
Millions of dollars in access charges.
In access charges, that's right.
Uh-huh, I see. So
yes, we are losing in that sense.
I see.
If there are no further questions, we urge the court to affirm the FCC.
All right, counsel for petitioner.
Your Honor, I would like to make 4 points quickly. First, as I hear the commission's argument, this case is controlled by Jefferson. The commission said we wouldn't be here if the tariffs had been billed and collected, to take up Judge Kavanaugh's line of cases. That it was the failure to bill and collect in a net out situation that makes this something that they find there's not an end user relationship here. Well, that's Jefferson 1. And in Jefferson 1, the commission says where there's a net flow of funds agreement and the carrier doesn't bill, the remedy for that is that we institute a proceeding against the carrier. The filed rate doctrine is applicable here. And the filed rate doctrine imposes a duty on you to do that billing and collecting because it's important to us, the commission, to be able to track what you're doing. You didn't bill and collect. We're instituting a proceeding against you for under our administrative powers for failure to comply. That's the answer here. It's not to give Quest a windfall. Second, I want to clarify my answer to Judge Rogers' question about whether Jefferson 2 involved the end user.
Quest says they didn't get a windfall.
I'm sorry?
Quest said they have no windfall, that they don't want this traffic, that they don't make any money on it.
Well, the argument here turns on what counsel identified, that the long-distance companies prefer to bill their clients on an unlimited long-distance basis. The problem comes because, as a business model, that's what they choose to adopt. They could go back and bill their customers by the minute. They prefer not to do that because they think they can market better and market against the competition by having an unlimited flat fee basis. That's all that's involved here. That's a complete red herring because they've made this decision consciously. What they're trying to do here is to have their cake and eat it too. They want to have the current flat fee billing arrangement, but they don't want to pay for the calls. But their customers are getting everything the customers wanted. The customers wanted to call these lines. They wanted to use Quest. It was delivered to the conference bridge, and the consumers participated in the call. They got everything that they wanted. And that's why we regard this as it's a business model in which they took an opportunistic attempt with the FCC and managed to persuade the FCC. Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to make certain that Judge Rogers understood my question. In Jefferson 2, the commission did not address the question under the end user rubric, but it did address squarely the question as to whether access service was being provided. AT&T raised it in the complaint. The commission considered it under whether we have access service under these situations. And the answer was, yes, we do, because the physical product is being delivered to somebody who signed up for the service. Under those situations, the filed rate doctrine applies. The terms of the contract don't matter. Because we have the service is being offered indiscriminately to all users of the local carrier, those who are part of the conference calling company and those that are not. And finally, I'd just like to make the point that in deciding Farmers 1, the commission and Quest had the contracts before them. The full contracts were there, and they showed that there was no net flow of funds. So the commission's discussion, it discovers after the fact that there wasn't billing and collecting going on, and that justifies them at ignoring Jefferson 1 and ignoring Jefferson 2, which they basically punt on in their prison, is simply not right. They had the full facts before them when they decided that the conference calling companies were subscribers because they had entered their name and they'd actually received the service.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take the case under advisement.